Hi, and welcome to episode 100 of the Studio Insider Art Podcast. I can't believe we've created 100 episodes of this little podcast. It's been such a joy to connect with you in this way over the past couple of years, and I am so grateful to each and every one of you for tuning in and sharing the journey with me. I've loved the connection with you and with the creatives all over the world that I'm able to nurture thanks to this podcast. It's been the perfect way for this little introvert to deepen my connection with other artists, and such a pleasure to be able to share it with you. To celebrate 100 episodes and to say thank you to you for supporting the podcast, I'm having a flash sale on my e-courses from the 5th to the 8th of April 2022. So if you'd like 20% off any of my e-courses or bundles, just use the coupon code 100, that's the number 100 at the checkout. Simply follow the links over at susannethercutstudio.com/online-classes to find your course. Okay, in today's episode, Steph and I are chatting about unitasking versus multitasking in our art practices and businesses. We dive deep into what I have specifically discovered during my painting as a practice month, that unitasking for extended periods of time is generally when I make my best work. I've also discovered similar benefits of having extended periods of focus on other tasks, such as making e-courses. We chat through different practical ways that I've been implementing to create a loose structure in the greater picture of my work life that best supports unitasking for extended periods. I do this so that I can ride my hyperfocus to its greatest benefit. In the end, we discover that when we truly accept who we are and how we're wired, therein lies the recipe for how to best approach our work style and rhythm. This is also the final episode for season 8 of the podcast, as we're about to move into school holidays here. I'll be back with some fab new interviews and chats with Steph on the 3rd of May. I'll catch you then. Hope you enjoy the episode. I'm Suze Nethercutt, and this is the Studio Insider Art Podcast, where I open up about what it's really like to be a professional artist. Whether I'm having chats with my studio bestie Steph, interviewing inspiring creatives, or answering listener questions, there's something here for every established and emerging artist. My mission is that my journey will help you feel a bit more at home in your own. Hi, Steph.
Hi, Suze.
How are you doing?
Well, you?
Yeah, pretty good, thanks.
Good. What were we chatting about, hey?
Well, I just want to say at the start, the dog's sitting at my feet, Suki, and she's talking. She really wants to play and she won't let us start recording. It's hilarious. And she knows if she barks, she'll get in trouble, so she's giving a funny little growly. So funny. But if we try and lock her out, she cries. It's like having a baby. Anyways, I digress.
Already. That was quick.
I can't play right now, puppy.
No. Mum's busy.
I'm busy. All right. I want to talk about something that I'm
I can't focus. It's too funny. Okay. What do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about, it's actually quite ironic because I want to talk about unitasking versus multitasking, okay. But the dog is preventing me from doing it.
I can't even. Oh, Suki, I'll play with you. I'll play with you. Let mommy focus on what she's doing. Come here.
Oh, Steph has the touch.
Oh, my goodness.
See, she'll actually come to you and let her lift you up. She won't do that with me. She plays, like if I reach out, she's like, ooh, we're playing now. She runs away. So you maybe you'll have to hold her the whole time.
Oh, I'm okay with that.
So that's like, yeah, let's actually start.
actually try and do this podcast.
Yeah, she's a delightful dog but makes podcasting hard. Yeah, I wanted to talk about, like, you know how 10 years ago it was all about the multitasking, and then the last couple of years, you know, we've had a lot of people talking about unitasking, and you know, as two people, that are neurodiverse, I've got ADHD, you think you probably do, you know, and unitasking and having opportunities for hyperfocus is actually a really great thing.
Yeah, I mean, the research is coming out, you know, again and again about how bad for your brain it is to try and multitask.
Totally, and ineffective as well.
Yes.
So no one does a very good job.
Mm-hmm. But you're taking this to a whole other level. You're not talking about, like, you know, not trying to check your emails while you're on the phone. You're talking about, like, prolonged periods of focus.
Yeah, I am. And I'm talking about, like, taking those opportunities for how you're wired and how you are and letting them help you to dictate how you structure your working life to take advantage of that. And it's something I've been mucking around with forever because I'm actually very interested in this topic of, like, how we best function as humans and how we're happiest and most productivity has kind of moved lower down in the scale for me in terms of motivations. I'm more interested in getting through my day and feeling really happy and balanced and satisfied. But I have been trying to figure out a way as I move along this journey of, you know, how to best function given what I know about myself, to just figure that out once and for all in real time, like through practice, right? So one of the ways that I guess I've most deeply explored unitasking as a technique that can help me be a better artist is my painting as a practice, which I do every February.
And we haven't reflected on that yet.
No, so we haven't.
Would you say that's your biggest takeaway from that experience?
There are lots of different takeaways. It probably is actually how effective it is for me in terms of my art practice and the improvement I see in my skill and in really deep diving into different journeys that I want to take in my painting. It does me a huge favour to focus in that way on my art. It's definitely something I think I will do periodically for the rest of my life. And the thing that works for me best about it is that I remove the focus from any other administrative tasks. So that's not to say I don't do those things during the day, because I do, but I completely shift the emphasis onto February, which is the month that I do it annually for my community, but I do it sometimes throughout the year if I want to, is the time that I actually devote to painting. And I don't try and make e-courses, and I don't try and record a bunch of podcasts, and I don't try and plan a whole – I don't list work for sale. I just – painting is the focus of my day. So, yes, I check my emails at some stage and respond to people that need to be responded to, and, you know, if someone buys something or orders a print, I take care of that. But that's like 1 to 1.5 hours of my day. The rest of the time is solid painting time.
And interestingly, this is off a period of sustained rest. So you structure your year so that January is family time, is rest, is taking a vacation, all that stuff. And
deep rest.
So do you feel like that serves you? You're coming in from
100%, because I'm making a very bold statement to myself front and center at the start of the calendar year, which is the most important thing in my work life is painting. That is the core of everything. That is my highest work.
Yeah.
And every time I do it, it reminds me of that. And every year I give myself complete freedom as to how I approach painting as a practice. Some years I'll make, you know, works on paper where I'm making one single work a day. I've done like a watercolor practice for a whole month, which was wonderful to deep dive and explore into that medium. And this year for painting as a practice, I just made it about easel painting and whatever I wanted to create. And I did that for two reasons. One was that I actually had deadlines for things that I needed to produce, but I wanted to produce them in the context of the freedom that I feel in painting as a practice, because I don't, there's free, because of the volume of work that I tend to create in that period of time, I think I create better work, frankly, in that period. And the pieces that I'm producing, I want them to be really, really good.
Yeah.
So that was part of the reason I focused on easel painting, but also because as I move along in my career, it becomes more and more obvious to me that where I shine as an artist and what I enjoy doing the most and find is the best fit for me and my body feels right doing it and just everything feels right is painting large. So it was just wonderful to give myself complete freedom to enjoy that and explore that this February. And I feel like for me it's the way forward, like that I need these concentrated blocks of time to create within, and not just painting either. Like, right. I think I need to do that unitasking and that deep dive and that hyper focus mm-hmm. with many of the projects I work on. Mm-hmm. So I've now put aside the painting daily to work on finishing my Be Like Water e-course, and that will be my hyper focus over the next.
And do you feel as invigorated by that?
I really do, because I feel really sated.
Yeah.
Through having painted for all that time, I really feel ready to knuckle down, and I'm ready. Like, I feel good about that. I actually really enjoy the making of the e-courses, so long as I'm not doing it all the time.
Yeah, and trying to do everything else as well at the same time. Do all the things.
Yes, and I do a much better job at everything when I do it that way, because my eye's really on the detail and I'm able to contain it all. Whereas, I don't know about you, but if I'm trying to do it all, I tend to lose pieces along the way.
Well, I feel like when I try and do it all, I'm not doing any of it particularly well.
That's the thing that I really struggle with, actually, is it does impact on quality. I make better work when I'm making it in a concentrated period of time. I'm 100% sure of that.
So in a world where I feel like for maybe, you know, the last half a decade or so, consistency is being thrown around so much. Like, that's what the world is telling us we should be seeking as artists, as creative professionals. When consistency is translated as showing up for all the things all the time, how do you feel like that's impacted your practice? Like, do you feel like it, investing in one aspect makes you feel less consistent in others? Or has that not been an issue?
No, because I'm actually equally invested in all of them. I'm just invested in them at different times. Yeah. I think probably the biggest favour that it did for me when I got my ADHD diagnosis is to let go of neurotypical ideas like that and neurotypical approaches to working.
Yes.
And to fully embrace that it can only ever be my way, which I kind of already knew, but would quietly flagellate myself about that. Do you know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Like, now I just fully accept that I am not neurotypical. I'm not going to be able to function in that way and be all over all the things all the time. And the more that I experiment with ways of working that support the way I'm built, which I have to say hyperfocus is definitely one of my big superpowers. When I'm in it, I'm in it, and I have moments in each medium where I just feel so – I feel like I've dived right into the middle of whatever I'm creating, and I'm truly enjoying it, and I'm immersed in it, and I'm good at it.
Yes.
Because I'm fully with it. I'm fully present with it. I have moments of virtuosity. I don't mean that in an arrogant way. I mean that in a way where I feel so at one with the process of whatever I'm doing mm-hmm. that I don't even have to think about it. Like, I'm just so sure about how whatever it is I'm doing needs to progress and to become what it needs to be. So, yeah, I don't even know what the question was.
Oh, that's me. Awkward.
No, it was around the whole consistency. Yeah. It's really interesting. I've heard this talked about a bit on a few ADHD podcasts. I think it might have been ADHD actually, or I don't even know. I can't remember because I have ADHD. It was one of the podcasts. They talked about this question of consistency and this myth that consistency is the only way that you can achieve success. Well, they believed it was a myth because for the very reasons that I'm talking about, if ADHD people follow their hyperfocus and their flow, they can achieve supranormal things far and beyond what neurotypical people can achieve when they're in a state of flow. Mm-hmm. So if we embrace those moments, however inconsistently they occur, that adds up to a consistency that's kind of in its own category. And I totally agree with that.
Yes. Okay. So instead of chipping away at an iceberg, you're blasting it with a high-powered hose. You know, you're like smashing it apart in one big thing.
Well, kind of, except that I haven't done that entirely with this e-course, to be honest, because I've improved in – I have help now. I have an editor that's helping me, that's a remote editor. So I actually have been chipping away. Someone else has been chipping away
at editing.
Like the footage for this new e-course is just so much better. The whole thing is just so much improved on previous e-courses because it's a professional editor.
Mm-hmm.
And so someone's been chipping away. I'm just at the bit where I'm going to bring it all together.
Yeah, right.
And create a harmonious whole out of these pieces that have been in production actually for 9 months.
Yeah.
So it hasn't been that I haven't been chipping away, but the piece where I have to bring that together into a harmonious whole is the bit where I require that hyperfocus.
Yeah, I want to just revisit this terminology, hyperfocus. We're very familiar with it. But for anybody that isn't, sorry, I just could put the dog down.
Yes, she'll be tip-tapping
too wriggly. This, you know, I before developing that language, I would think about it as those moments where you're so inspired and excited by something that you can't help yourself. You're so passionate that you go and buy all the things and it's all you can think about and you're completely absorbed by it. And as an artist, that can create really amazing work.
It can create amazing work.
Amazing work. But the thing about it is you can't control it. It comes when it comes and it goes when it goes. So what you're saying is in that month, you felt the pull, you followed it with all of your heart and it made you create beautiful work.
Well, the interesting thing about painting as a practice is I obviously manufactured it.
Right.
I manufactured my hyperfocus. So I actually understand what you're saying and it does occur in a spontaneous way in my life for sure. But the thing that I have experimented with painting as a practice over like the last 3 years that this has been going on now is this question of can you manufacture that kind of focus and inspiration? And my answer is yes, you can to a degree. And that's what happens to me in that month. I define the space for it and I'm able to do it. I'm not saying that that's what everyone can do, but for me, I have been able to create the time and space to have moments of that within that. If
so
that makes sense.
You've nurtured your garden so it's the ideal conditions for that
to flourish. Well, I know that I'm really ready to paint in February every year because I haven't done much work over summer. I deliberately don't paint a lot through summer because I need a break and I'm with my family and I'm on holiday and I read lots of books and go on walks and holidays and all of the things. And I have tended that garden by allowing it to be fallow. So by the time February rocks around and the kids go back to school, I am ready and raring. So I kind of save it up and it always explodes because I'm so ready for it. And it frames up the year perfectly. So it comes a lot from self-knowledge, I think. Like you get to know your rhythms and your best circumstances for creating those spaces in your life. And it's like with moving into the e-course in March, we're entering autumn. I love doing painting as a practice in February because I love being barefoot in the studio or the veranda to paint, like enjoying the last of the beautiful weather for summer as it is here in Australia at that time. And then March when it starts to get cooler, April, it's like, you know, it's getting colder and you kind of don't quite mind being inside and being cozy and being in front of the computer so much.
Mm.
So, and then I'm really ready to embrace that space as well. And the other reason I love to create, you know, move into a phase of something such as an e-course creation after a period of painting is that I've made so many observations within myself during that period of time that I want to share with other people. It always bears on how I put that material together and create something that is a real true expression of what I've discovered through my own process, like the very deepest part of what I want to share with other artists, because I don't want to just mechanically create a course that's just like everybody else's course. I want it to be, as much as my art is a representation for me, I want those courses to be a representation of what I believe as an artist and what I most want to share of value to other artists.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the perfect thing to flow into after a period of painting because I'm so fresh within my own process that I can share that. Wow, I can't believe we've created 100 episodes of the Studio Insider Art Podcast. To celebrate and to thank you for your support of this wild podcast ride, I'm having a flash sale of 20% off all e-courses and bundles from the 5th to the 8th of April 2022. So be sure to pop on over and follow the links at susannethercutstudio.com/online-classes and use the coupon code 100, that's the number 100, at the checkout to claim your discount.
Okay, so thinking about this in terms of the structure of your year, we're quite clear about what the beginning of the year looks like. Do you think that what you're learning now will lead you to making further structural changes or, you know, a framework in your year into the future?
I pretty much have a framework every year. So I'm pointing up on the wall behind me. I have a year of a calendar up on my wall in the studio that I write up every year in January. I block out all the school holidays. I don't try to work during school holidays. I've learnt that that just is not helpful to anyone in my family nor myself because I need a break and I want to spend time with my children in that time, and I'm also the primary carer. And always there's things that creep into it and that's enough, you know?
Yeah.
So I have a structure. I have four distinct periods in the year around school terms that I do projects within. And I've learnt a long time ago. You actually knew me back in Creative Conversation days when I was teaching this stuff. And I've been thinking about that a bit lately because I still use a lot of the things that I taught within that. It was a business that was around where I coached creative professionals. And about, you know, how you fill that time and leaving enough white space so that there's enough space around it to account for things not running into each other.
Mm.
So I know that February and that first quarter of the year, I go into it with painting, and then, you know, this year I'm going e-course straight after because I have one poised ready to finish.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening.
Was that similar last year though?
Well, the last couple of years were a bit of a mess, weren't they?
Oh, gosh, yeah, well, okay, yeah, you're right.
The last couple of years, I mean, I produced three courses over that time that collectively, though, each of those courses became the Painting as a Practice trilogy. And so they all got produced pretty much over a period of a year.
And I remember that.
And that was hard work.
Yeah, it was. And they were very intensive periods of work where you were like, sometimes it was more joyful than others.
Well, it was hard.
But you were like, I'm going to get this done by this time. So we were, you know, chatting privately about deadlines and how you refer to them as your kryptonite.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, if they're set by you, they can be very powerful.
Yes, it's like with painting as a practice, having that month and a deadline at the end of it to complete paintings, because I booked a photographer for the last day of February, so I had no choice. And they can actually be really effective. And also that last stretch of getting some like an e-product out there like that can be so hard.
Oh, yeah.
That you really do need to push yourself over the line for the end bit of it. But back in those courses, I did all of the video editing myself. I did all of the graphic design, everything. What's changing this time around is I have a professional video editor that's editing for me. So it takes a huge, huge amount off my plate, and also is a hugely better result because they know what they're doing way better than I do in iMovie. And also I'm also bringing on a graphic designer to help with some of that other asset creation for it. So, you know, I'm slowly getting better at delegating those things out. And let me just say something I could not do before I was on my ADHD medication, because I couldn't chunk down tasks very well. So that's a really nice change.
Can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah.
Because you told me that you didn't take your medication whilst you were in an intensive period of painting. And I found that fascinating.
Yes. So I had COVID in February while I had painting as a practice as well. So there were a few days when I didn't do the big easel painting, and I just, you know, there was sort of 3 or 4 days where I was on the couch and was really unwell. But for the rest of the time, I found the easel painting really quite healing. And
you know, for the most part, I kind of find myself still there 3 hours later, and I didn't feel like I'd exhausted myself. I feel like I'd feel, felt like I'd energized myself. But I also didn't take my ADHD medication during that month because I didn't want to have, I wanted to let my body tell me how it was feeling and not push myself beyond my limits.
Okay.
Which, you know, if you're on stimulant medication, you can do that a bit more. And I did just really wanted to give my system a rest. And I think I paint better off medication than I do on. Mm. So that was a really interesting insight. I feel like I journey into a painting in quite a deep and meditative way that's easier for me to get into when I'm off the medication. I really mm-hmm. liked the work I created off the medication. But then toward the end of the month when I got back onto it, I got to compare and contrast because I'm always treating myself like a living science experiment. And I could still paint well, but the leaps that I made, the creative leaps that I made, I think were better off the medication.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the benefits of having stimulant medication as opposed to other types of medication for ADHD, because you can you don't have to take that every day if you choose not to, whereas others are sort of a daily thing that you have to take all the time. So that was an interesting experiment in itself. Thanks for asking about that because it's something I was curious to explore too.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. So as for the structure of just returning back around to your original question about like how I'm structuring things, I also know that I love to create big bodies of work of big paintings in winter.
Right.
So like July, August is usually a very fertile creative time for me because the weather's so rubbish here and my studio is so warm and cozy. But I also just feel, I think there's something in me that craves the color and the vibrancy of the paintings themselves during those cold winter months. So I'll create another focus period for myself then for painting again of some kind.
Yeah.
So I haven't like completely mapped out the rest of the year. I'm sort of taking it as it comes.
I think there's some quite solid structure in there.
Well, there is. There's a loose structure, and I think we've talked about this a few times. Like, loose structure is good. Like, it gives you space to breathe and move, and gives you space to follow interests and what your flow, basically, mm-hmm. which is so important to both of us.
It is. I started doing that on a really small level. You know, anyone who's neurotypical loves a good list, right? But they're my kryptonite.
Mm.
But I have been making might do lists instead of to do lists.
Oh, nice.
So just so things don't fall out of my brain, I'm writing them down, but I don't put pressure around them.
Mm.
It's very loose. Like, these are things that need to happen sometime soon. And then I pick and choose
and then
from
you
those.
You tackle them when you feel
inspired to do so. I mean, you know, we're not talking about the super important things like paying the mortgage. You know, we're talking about like these things need photographing or those things.
Yes.
That, you know, things that have an element of creativity or that artist statement needs writing.
Yeah. Well, yes, things like that, absolutely. And like that, like you want to do them when you're in the zone.
In the zone, because if you don't, they're kind of a failure, really. You're wasting your time.
Yes.
You need to sort of be inspired in that direction, I think.
Absolutely. And, you know, both of us are hyper-focused people that perform incredibly well when we're in that state. So I'm very similar. Like I operate pretty much in the same way but slightly different to you. Like we really do. But I guess I'm just a little bit more structured in terms of, you know, like calendar on the wall and stuff isn't something that you do. But for me, having it literally physically out in front of my eyes is so helpful.
I do calendar on the wall, but it's a one-page calendar, so it's big and it's the whole year in a view. And I put it where I can see it when I'm on the toilet. Because,
awesome.
You know,
where all the best decisions are made.
Well, I need reminding of, I need to keep you on track sometimes. Like, okay, what is it that I need? to yes. be achieving, not just want to be achieving. And
yes, yeah, yeah. absolutely.
That's my top organisational tip for people that hate organisational tips.
Absolutely. And I wanted to talk a bit about, so the one of the bits that we've talked about this a few times, how hard I found it historically to the phase where I have to list and sell my work.
Yes, right.
Like such a not fun part of the process for me, and can take an inordinately huge amount of time because it's battles with my all of my challenge areas, like my dyscalculia, which is numbers dyslexia that I know that I have. You know, putting that kind of information in fields is very challenging, and I make heaps of mistakes with numbers and measurements. And so what I did to tackle that this time, it was a bit of a rip the Band-Aid off. So I booked the photographer for the end of February when I knew I would have my body of work, and I knew it wouldn't be so huge that it would feel insurmountable. So I didn't let it build up.
Okay, still a lot of work though for you know, how many pieces?
It was a reasonable amount. A dozen.
Okay, yeah.
Which actually isn't, like, I think the one from the year before was like 26 or something, which is a lot of listing. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. The photographer came, like, and another huge part that's been tricky is the photographer takes some time to edit the photos, and sometimes they don't come back till a month later. So this time, wow, I photographed them myself as well as having her do the high-res stuff, so that I just went through and edited stuff. But I have to tell you that that aspect of the job has improved out of sight for me on the medication. I can now do that job.
That's
and
great.
And it doesn't break me like it used to. So that piece is such a relief.
And are you able to understand and use shortcuts or different systems? Because that was a challenge for you too. Like, there is a shorter way to do this, but unless you follow the convoluted route, you'd make mistakes, for example.
Yeah.
You know, have you found that bit easier?
Yes. My thinking is far more ordered on medication. Right. And much more sequential and logical, and data entry is not the soul-destroying, upsetting experience it was, because it would just confront me with all of the things that I do the worst.
Yes.
Like in one fell swoop.
Yes.
And would go on for a really long time because yes. I keep making mistakes and having to go back and fix it.
And you're pretty miserable, and it took days and days.
How bad was it? How bad was it? Oh. So, you know, I knocked that over pretty quickly. It was all done, the photography, the editing of the photography, the entering of the data onto the spreadsheet, the listings on my on the website, and then the, you know, newsletter and promotion, got it done in a week.
Wow.
Which is like a miracle for me, like, the, you know, just in normal work days.
And how did that go down with your buying public? Like, do you think keeping
okay.
that short and sweet meant that people were more connected to art?
Look, I've really shifted my yardstick on measuring the success of the selling of my art, because at the time that I was selling that, well, there's a few reasons I've done that. I just have to be very clear with myself that my worth is not measured by how many people buy my collection in the first 24 hours. Like, we've had so many conversations about that
yes.
I just have a tape now in my head that plays that over and over, and I don't do the huge promotional runway thing. I did in this case have a few pre-sales, which was nice, and it wasn't a huge success, but it was okay, because at the time I was selling that, there was like huge floods here in Australia, the war had broken out in the Ukraine, so much bad stuff had just happened that I knew that it wasn't going to be good anyway. And also since we've been having so many more conversations recently around, you know, the long game of being an artist and building a really solid foundation for yourself in terms of how you represent yourself and the deeper meaning about what your work's about,
mm-hmm.
and also having observed the way that people have been buying my art the last few years. You know, back when Instagram was amazing,
I could just sell out whole collections and it would happen, you know, but it hasn't happened that way for me for a few years. But the work generally sells eventually.
Yeah.
It's just it's a slower game. So the way I see it is I do the launch not because I expect there to be a huge response. It's more for me to get it out there.
Yeah.
And the other thing I've done, which is a game changer around that, because I now also list on Blue Thumb, which is an online art platform here in Australia that both you and I are on actually, and that's another listing. After I've done the launch, the following week I've put in my diary each day list one thing.
Right.
So that I'm not having to do a whole other big batch of listings in one, but also it's better from the point of view of how that system works at Blue Thumb, because they send out a notification every time an artist uploads a new work. When you have followers on your Blue Thumb account, it sends an email to them and shows it to them. So from my perspective, it's far smarter for people to be getting one email every 1 or 2 days saying and keeping them aware of what I've put out there.
Yeah. So, I hear you. That's how Instagram used to work in the old days, hey? You know, like that constant, continual drip in real time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how I've managed that sales side of things. And I'm proud of myself that I've really shifted my attitude around that. But again, the medication has helped heaps with my RSD, which is rejection sensitive dysphoria, that used to be a huge problem for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have that same level of sensitivity around, you know, not having amazing results.
So you can do the job and tick it off
and move,
move forward. Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So it went okay. It wasn't astronomically amazing, but overall with all the other parts of my business and things that I have going on, it all kind of works out in the wash, which brings me around to why I keep on doing all things and finding the spaces and blocks for time to do them in, because each of them feeds me in a different way.
Yeah. And this podcast is one of those branches. How is it going publishing less often? How's that?
Oh, it's just been so good and such a game changer for me, because I have much more sanity in my life, not trying to get a podcast out every week, and it hasn't affected listenership. People are still coming. Thank you, everyone. We're so glad you enjoy our conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that's true for all of you out there. But I feel like the quality of each episode is so much better as a result.
I agree. I feel like things have a bit more time to percolate. There's less of a hustle to find content, or like, oh, lock in that person for an interview, panic. And it can be a bit more considered.
Absolutely. It absolutely is far saner. And I think there's enough out there that everyone's consuming that they don't really need a weekly from me. And you, like, and it's because I now only do the newsletter fortnightly as well. I felt that already, like when I was making that decision, I just felt like by the end of 2021 that no one was wanting all these emails all the time. So it's far saner.
That's great.
And I feel like it'll serve the podcast in the long term, don't you? Well, it burnt you out pretty good and proper as an editor when you were doing that.
Yeah, it's nice to step away from producing and just focus on the content a bit more. But I did check in on, on the podcast, all the boring bits, all the behind-the-scenes stuff, and I noticed that you've ticked over 150,000 listens.
Isn't that mind-blowing?
Mind-blowing.
Like, that's cray-cray.
It is. And that's not to say you have 150,000 listeners.
No.
But that's to say that.
That's how many episodes have been listened to by human beings on
Human planet beings.
Earth.
And it's not a huge number of human beings. So thank you, human beings, for persisting, for like coming back.
Yeah.
That's incredibly validating. Like, don't take one listen and then like, oh, never listening to those girls again. Mm. It's like, what, you know, that's community, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, this is the shift I feel like's happened for me over the last year is, you know, I'm not and you're not like enormously successful popular artists, but we have I think we have and share something that for the people that we resonate with is it's a real true connection.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're the people that I create for, and that's enough. And I feel like this, you know, I think I had for a few years there, you know, an idea of, you know, wanting to be bigger and better and, you know, whatever the hell that even means. I don't think I even really knew what that meant. I just kind of lived in this constant sense of, oh, well, shouldn't I be better? To a space of like, it doesn't matter because I love what I do. I love all of the aspects that I do. And when I sit down, and I actually did this recently, I sat down with my wonderfully analytic husband and went through, you know, pros and cons of what I'm doing in my business and do I actually want to continue doing it. And really the three areas I was examining were art, podcast, e-courses.
Right.
I want to do all of them because I love them all. But I don't want to do any of them 100% of the time. I need to shift between them because they feed different parts.
Yeah.
And I'm so lucky, and I don't have to be like the biggest and the best to be able to exist in that space and to make a living from it. It's just wonderful. Like, it's such a privilege. And now that I'm clear on that, I feel like I'm making what I truly want to make instead of like, you know, the ideas I might have in my head about how something I'm doing should look like. I feel like I'm really disengaging from other people's models and really fully embracing more of my own.
It sounds like you have a much deeper understanding of what success looks like to you.
Absolutely.
In a way that perhaps you hadn't investigated before, you were basing that on what success looked like within other people's businesses and practices. And
I feel like you're kind of in the same process at the moment too. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, it's always constantly evolving, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm very clear on those parameters. And it's hard, but trying not to compare myself is, I think, the key.
It really is, isn't it? Like, seriously is. I've been very much always have that front and center in my mind when I'm consuming content from other people these days. And I think I'm actually about to go through a process of physically removing myself from some people that I've been, you know, following and actually investing in for quite a long time, because I'm like, there's nothing here for me from you anymore, because my path is so different. Like some people that are, you know, the way that, for example, that they might promote, you know, having an art business, it's so geared toward neurotypical people that it just is never going to work for me.
Mm.
And I know what works for me. So I just want to embrace that and the wisdom I have from within around what most supports me. I feel like both of us have just grown so much with understanding our neurodiversity in that context. Would you agree?
Yes, I do. I think for you it's been triggered around like some medical clarity.
Absolutely. Which,
oh my goodness, the number of conversations I've had with women when I talk about what I'm discovering about myself and their faces shift and there's this sense of realization of, oh, hang on. But, yeah, like, you know, we're always learning about ourselves continually, hopefully, unless we're in complete denial. But every little bit of knowledge about who we are as humans for anybody propels us forward, doesn't it? Like, helps
absolutely
us build a life that we want in a way that's much more aligned with who we are instead of this completely unachievable
ideal, yes,
which doesn't exist. Let's be honest,
it might exist somewhere else, but it doesn't exist in Australia right now. Well, maybe it does, I don't know, that's another question, but yeah, it's so true, isn't it? I think for me, like what I have personally gotten out of having a medical diagnosis for ADHD and then unpacking that in the context of this podcast with you and consequently thousands of other people in the world, what that has done is given me, it's so helped me along the road of complete self-acceptance.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, my God, that has just changed my life.
Hey, that I think for me that's the key piece too, self-acceptance.
Yes, it's self-acceptance, and that lies at the bottom of so many decisions that I'm making for my life.
Mm.
Yeah. And my business and the way that I operate.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, that's we could talk about that so much more. Now that's in my head. I'm like, I'm really going to mull on that between now and when we next chat, because self-acceptance, yeah. Yeah. That's fascinating.
It is fascinating.
Yeah.
But we better stop there because I've been rambling for quite some time.
Right. Oh, thanks, Steph. Great chat. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll catch you later. Bye.
Bye.
You can always see more of my art over at susannethercutt.com. And if you're interested in learning from me or checking out the podcast notes, you can find those over on susannethercuttstudio.com. I love hearing your comments and feedback, so feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you like what you're hearing, then why not snap a screenshot and share it in your Instagram stories? Be sure to tag me at susan.nethercutt so I can say hi. And if you've got a great idea for a future podcast episode or know someone who you think I should interview, then pop on over to susannethercuttstudio.com/podcast. Hit the button in the header image to shoot me an email. Catch you next time.